Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, I am introducing a new company, really, to the TSX Venture Exchange and on our show. The company is Mantero Silver, traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol MSLV. I am chatting with the president and CEO, Chris Wilson. Now, Chris, again, as I said, this is a new company. It just started trading on the Venture Exchange in June. The strategy here is in Peru. Can you first just start us off, please, with a summary of why Peru and what are the big picture plans here for the company in Peru?
Why Peru? Well, essentially, it's an extraordinarily good mining jurisdiction. The infrastructure's there. Everything else is there. You know, I used to work for Robert Friedland in sort of 2003, 2004, as the Soviet Union collapsed. Everyone thought they'd charge off into those parts of the world. And we quickly found out that the money was there, the infrastructure was there, and we couldn't deploy dollars. So, you know, there's less and less places in the world where you can go and deploy dollars safely and have a good chance of, you know, a very significant high-grade discovery. In Peru seemed to fit the bill. We were there late 2019 consulting, and it became apparent that a lot of high-grade silver deposits were somewhat unloved. COVID started to happen, people started to leave, the industry shut down a little bit, and we were able to pick up two very nice high-grade projects at a really market discount. I believe we were slightly ahead of the curve. It was somewhat of a perfect storm that came together. Great mining jurisdiction, good opportunity for high-grade discovery.
Let's talk about the company's flagship project then, the 100% owned Santa Gloria high-grade silver property. Now, we already have seen some underground channel samples in a news release from June 2nd that showed some high-grade silver and also a couple high-grade gold samples as well on a couple different veins on this project. Give us a background on what drew you to the Santa Gloria project and the work that's going to be undertaken here in the near term.
Yeah, I think to backtrack just a little bit, you know, I've been a consultant in 76 countries, 30 years. Usually on the money side, looking at projects. And what I wanted to try and find was projects where we could get 100%, you know, where the deal structures were sensible, so there were no, you know, no caveats or nothing that was going to come along down the track. You know, we can weather market sentiment on these deals we've got in place. I wanted them to be high grade, and I wanted them not to have been drill tested. So, you know, most people think of a non-drill tested project is early stage grassroots. In what was nice about Santa Gloria and San Jose is they've been held by private Peruvian companies that have gone underground on these veins. So there's limited production. You can get underground, you can look at the veins underground, and that past production and that access demonstrated the thesis. Steeply dipping to vertical veins, mineable widths in very high grade. So that was really the attraction, you know, the ability to take 100%. Some mining that demonstrated, you know, real potential, it never drill tested. Because, you know, you've got to be pretty special to say we're going to do something different to the four companies that have gone before you. So, you know, we've up at Santos Glorious, we've got over 16 veins in vein splays, over 12 kilometers of veins, in places up to 5 meters wide, multi-phase and brecciated, never been drill tested. In high grade underground. I mean, the highest grade sample we took underground was over 10,000 parts per million silver. That's about 320 ounces. We had a lot over 100 ounces and a significant number above 15 to 20 ounces silver. The gold component you allude to, the veins, when they outcrop at surface or leach, they're oxidized. You leave metal outside in the rain, it rusts. So most of the base metals is leached out of the veins. And if you get above 3 ounces silver, it's highly significant because of that. What we didn't expect to find was gold samples up to 56 grams per ton. So it looks like we've sort of got an intermediate sulfidation silver base metal system with possibly a low sulfidation overprint at the end, bringing in the gold. So it's a very healthy system in terms of gold and silver precious metals, base metals, and all the other attributes.
So, Chris, I wanted to get you on the show right away because, A, this is a newly listed company, but you also have a planned 7,500-meter drill program to test out 5 different targets or vein systems on this project. Give us a little bit more insights on the targets, these near-term drill targets that will be tested this year.
Okay, well, the two of the veins, San Jorge and Tembladera, is where the underground workings were. And we're talking very small workings, you know, 100 meters vertically, 150 meters along strike on the vein. So we've been able to get underground on those. We know the high grade is there. We know where they were mining. And the depth extension of those areas are obviously high priority targets. You know, if you go right under where they were mining, that's got to be a good place to start. Add to that the surface anomalies on top of those veins. You know, it San Jorge, we've got a 450 meter zone at surface that's very anomalous in silver, despite being leached. We've got 3 small stopes underneath it, and our best silver assay was up to 3,200 grams per ton. So drilling beneath and to the side of the two veins that were mined before is we deemed to be relatively low risk in an obvious place to start. It's worth understanding that the small-scale miners in Peru never sunk shafts. They walked down the valley, went horizontal in on the vein, and then mined upwards using gravity to take the water out in the ore. Santos Glorious is a little bit unusual. We've got a large sort of flat plateau up on the top, and this is where most of the 12 kilometers of veins are. Because they couldn't go down the valley on these, they were untouched. The northern veins, no underground workings, but they got very significant silver anomalism and up to 56 grams gold. So our plan is to drill multiple holes off one pad, target in the vein, you know, 50 to 100 meters down. Don't try and complicate the science. Go undergrade, keep it safe, and try and drill out from there. So we'll start on the areas that have got underground workings and are super high grade, and then we'll move to 3 of the veins that only have surface anomalism and drill under those. Easy access to all of them, all good.
Okay. Yeah, seems pretty straightforward. And again, this is the first drill program on these targets especially, so really just getting your feet under you. So again, near-term drivers here, obviously moving towards getting that drill program started and the 7,500 meters at the Santos Gloria project. The company also has 3 other earlier stage projects that you have acquired through staking. These are all also in Peru. Give us a little background on the strategy behind these 3 projects and please introduce them.
Yeah, well, there's actually the 4 projects, because although Santos Glorious is the flagship, San Jose is another advanced project. So let's talk about San Jose a little bit, then we'll come on to the 3 earlier stage ones. San Jose's in a great mining camp. It's had a little bit of underground workings. One of the major silver producers had looked at it. This is on the website. And they think about 40,000 tons has been taken out at between 15 to 20 ounces silver. So again, the underground workings demonstrate the thesis. The veins are silver endowed. The veins at San Jose are slightly wider than Santos Glorious. They're up to 3 meters wide underground. And there's about, we think about 10 to 12 kilometers in about 4 to 5 main vein sets that, again, have had very little work at all, because the company was Peruvian. It was focused on its small-scale production. It'll be a bit longer before we can drill that one, because we need to get up on there and do a lot more surface work, understand the geochemistry, the grade distribution. But that's a very nice-looking project as well. The 3 earlier ones, Peru has a very good government database. We came across some little past-producing mines, small-scale things, with up to about 30 to 40 ounces per ton silver, gram or 2 of gold. And for $12,700, we staked them outright. They are early stage, and they come with early stage risk. And they're on the back burner at the moment. But then with an annual holding cost of $12,700, you know, they were obvious things to pick up. So a lot more work to be done on them. They're not a priority at the moment, but they're certainly not going to break the bank.
Okay. So just having that land package and the portfolio of projects as well. Chris, you've already given us a little bit of background on yourself, but it is your first time on the show. Give us some more insights into what you've done in the resource sector specifically.
Okay, well, I've been a exploration geologist, resource geologist for about 35 years. Worked in 76 countries during that time. I started off with Robert Friedland before he'd even taken the company public. I was there when he listed Indochina Goldfields back in the day. It became Ivanhoe Mines. And I slowly worked myself from Indonesia northwards to every country until I ended up the exploration manager for Mongolia. I decided to take the portfolio outside of Oyu Tolgoi. And at one stage, we had 127 licenses, totaling a contiguous land holding 2.5 times the size of Switzerland, 11 million hectares, spending about $1.5 million a month, 9 rigs turning. So we're used to big programs. We're used to managing these things. In 2003, 10 years with Robert was fairly intense. So I went out on my own. I had a spill as a principal geologist with SRK in UK for a couple of years. And really, since about 2006, I've been consulting with a small company of about 6 geologists, usually on the money side, usually reviewing projects and saying, should you invest or not? Also work at a reasonably high level. I was the lead geologist on the valuation of the 8 million ounce Matabi deposit for a successful bid by our client of $1.6 billion. The thing that makes me tick is looking at projects around the world. I tend not to fall in love with them. I look at them in a very economic way. Do they make sense? Will they make sense? You know, is there a value upside? Should they move up the exploration curve? You know, and I guess what I learned along the way is it is a game of numbers. It is a risk. You know, if you say 1 in 1,000 becomes a mine and 100 out of 1,000 deserve to start moving up the exploration chain and be drilled, you know, you've got to do everything you can to mitigate that risk. We've got 5 projects in Peru. We're looking aggressively at other things. You know, obviously, if you can keep it sensible and the earning and the option terms correct, then having a diversified portfolio is going to be better than just having one project. And I hope we're going to bring that 35 years experience to the company.
So, Chris, does that mean you guys might be building on this portfolio of the 5 projects currently?
Well, you know, it's a forward-looking statement. But yes, I mean, I believe the most successful juniors are the ones that can, you know, reduce the risk. As I said, if you're a one-project company and you've drilled it past its use-by date, well, to kill that project is to kill the company. You know, at any one time in Mongolia or any one time with Robert as his exploration manager, I was dealing with 20 or 30 projects. Now, I'm not saying we should run out and do what Robert did. That might be a little bit of a stretch for a new company. But certainly, you have to be able to feed projects in, provided you can do it sensibly. You don't, you know, don't break the bank. You don't have onerous payments. You don't have ridiculous JVs. You know, the cycle's still relatively early. There are opportunities out there. You know, I think one of my roles as CEO of the company is to try and find more projects. Be nimble, move fast. And, you know, if we can bring a few more in, and that may not happen, but we're going to try, then we start to reduce the risk. We have news flow, we have opportunity, and your discovery might not be the one that you think. So, yes, we're going to keep looking.
Okay. Hey, Chris, thanks for addressing that. Let's wrap it up with a couple more of the company fundamentals. Shares outstanding, about 58 million on a fully diluted basis, about 83 million. Chris, give us a little insight then into how much management holds, please, out of the gate.
Management holds about 20-25%. It's changing at the moment. I have been told by legal counsel that people are already striking the 55-cent warrants. So, you know, the cap structure is going to change significantly, you know, over the next couple of days. But yeah, management at the moment holds about 20-25%. But just log into the website from time to time and we'll keep that updated as best we can. You know, we've traded probably over 12 million shares in the last 2.5 days. So, you know, it's changing rapidly, but there you go.
Okay, perfect. Final question then. Cash in the bank. Where does the company stand? Understanding too that some of these warrants are still being exercised. And also, what's going to be the budget for that 7,500 meters?
We work on a basis of $250 a meter all in. That includes the geologists, the camp. So about $1.8 million, $2 million for the drilling. We've got an expenditure commitment by September next year, remaining of $1.2 million at Santos Glorious. So, you know, we're going to have to spend that any case. So $1.8 million on drilling. We've got 100% option then with no more commitments. We do have $1 million payment if we trigger 10 million ounce resource, but that's fine. So that's our only commitment, $1.2 million in ground left at Santos Glorious. And at San Jose, we've got about $350,000 to pay over the next 2 years and about $130,000 committed in the ground remaining. So we've got about $8 million, $9 million in the bank with the warrants coming in. And, you know, we'll go from there. No onerous things. We're going to survive this very well.
All right, Chris, that wraps us up here. In full disclosure, I am a shareholder of Mantero Silver. Again, it is traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol MSLV. If anybody has any follow-up questions, please email me, fleck@kereport.com. I'll get Chris to address those, and we will follow up on the back of some more news. Chris, thanks for your time. Thanks for the intro today.
Yep. Thank you very much, Corey. Thank you.